Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, Foo followers. Ben Johnson here, the host of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, reminding you that if you would like to support this show, we have a donations link available. Any spare pennies you may have would be greatly received to help with the upkeep of this show, the website, the social media accounts, and so on. Simply head over to paypal.me/Kung Fu Movie Guide to donate whatever you can. And a huge thank you to any listeners who have supported us over the years. You have our gratitude. Okay, thank you, and on with the show.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast with your host, Ben Johnson. That is me, talking to you from London in the UK. This is episode 84. This is the fifth episode in our new season of podcasts, season 7. And we have Robert Samuels on the show today, a.k.a. Bobby Samuels. This was great fun to talk to Bobby all about his career in Hong Kong action movies. The first African-American member of the Hong Kong Stuntman Association, a close personal friend of Sammo Hung. Bobby lived with Sammo for a time and he worked with him on the films The Gambling Ghost in 1991 and Don't Give a Damn in 1995. He met and worked with so many legends from Hong Kong action cinema, including Yen Wu Ping on the 1995 movie The Red Wolf. Bobby is now a filmmaker and actor back in the USA. He made his feature film directorial debut last year in 2021 with the action comedy Made in Chinatown, co-directing with the Hollywood stunt legend James Liu. That movie is available now to rent and buy on digital platforms. The film features actors from The Sopranos as well as kung fu movie legends like Lo Mang from The Five Venoms and Choi Chi Ling, a Hong Gar kung fu expert, probably most famous for his role in Stephen Chow's Kung Fu Hustle. So we do talk a little bit about Made in Chinatown and the people that Bobby met in Hong Kong and his recent projects. It's a great conversation that I do think you'll enjoy, and that's all coming up shortly on today's episode. Before we get into that, a quick reminder that as we get closer to the holiday season, Mike Fury and I are now looking ahead and planning our annual end of year show. It's become something of a tradition now for this podcast. We would love it for you to get involved in that episode, and you can do this by telling us your favorite fight films of 2022 and why. You can do this by emailing me at hello@kungfumovieguide.com. You can also reach out over social media. We are on Instagram and Facebook at Kung Fu Movie Guide, and we are also on Twitter at KF Movie Guide. If you're not sure which movies came out this year and would like to consult a list of fight-centric movies to choose from, then we do have a page prepared already on our website, which you can go to. Please use the link in the description of this show, or you can simply go to our website, kungfumovieguide.com. That's also where you'll be able to donate to the show, subscribe to our newsletter, and read the latest martial arts movie reviews. As is customary with the end-of-year show, Mike and I will be counting down our own personal top five favorite fight films from the year, and it's always a fun little experiment as we never tell each other beforehand what will appear in our top fives. And actually, most of the time we do sort of agree on the top spots, but it will be interesting to see what movies do make it into our top fives from this year. To find out, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast using your podcast provider. That is the best way to make sure that you never miss a brand new episode of this show. And if you do that, then please don't forget to give us a star rating as well. That would be very much appreciated. Okay, that's just about it from me for now. Let's go over to my conversation with Robert Samuels. This chat was recorded in August of this year, 2022. Robert continues to champion old school kung fu movies and fight choreography through his own projects, which are all well worth a look. I'll be sure to put links in the description of this episode so you can go and check out some of Bobby's more recent work. I will be back at the end of this conversation to talk a little bit more and to sign off properly. But until then, here we go then. Please sit back, relax and enjoy my conversation with the great action star and filmmaker Robert Samuels. I guess Made in Chinatown would be the first thing to mention here, because sure. That's just landed on Amazon Prime here in the UK. It's on Apple TV as well. I don't know if you knew that. Did you know that?
I didn't. I knew Mexico and the Latin countries, but I didn't realize it hit England yet.
It hit the UK. It always takes us a good year, maybe 2 years sometimes, to get a lot of these movies to come to us. I don't know why we're always at the
behind,
for some reason. I have no idea why. But congratulations on that movie. I know you've directed things in the past, and I know you've done short films, you've done TV work as well, but you know, getting a big feature film together, it must have been quite a challenge.
Especially with legends such as The Sopranos, you know. That was a tall order, you know. Yeah. They're veterans. They work with Scorsese and Coppola, everybody, you know. So Woody Allen. So, you know, they tested me, but, you know, in the end, they appreciated where I was coming from as a director. So that worked out.
How did you find working on a feature film? Obviously, it's very different to a short film, TV as well. Yes. Just generally, how did you find it all, Bobby?
I found it very, very interesting. Directing that, I think we had just over 2 million to pull that off. But of course you had to deal with the unions and the guilds and the, you know, this strict rules here in the U.S. as far as dealing with the unions and how you do movies here. But because I worked in Hong Kong, you know, I lived with Sammo, and that allowed, they gave me an understanding of how the whole process works anyway. So basically the short films were just kind of like the keep my name out there, keep the attention coming, showing what could be done for little money, quality wise, just waiting for an opportunity to get the chance to do a big film. So, you know, that was the best education in the world, working with Sammo. So it wasn't a hard transition. In fact, it may have been a little easier because the pace in Hong Kong is so quick. How they shoot, and the hours are just tremendously long, 16, 17 hour days. Yeah. So when I came to kind of start working back in America, in the American system and Made in Chinatown, the time didn't bother me, but I had to be mindful of the crew and the turnaround times and the union rules and not, you know, being into any penalties and making sure that the film came in on schedule. So,
Yeah, that's the challenge, isn't it? And I guess you're making an action comedy there. You know, it's got a sort of wisecracking script, but, you know, you've got some kung fu legends in this film as well. So that must have been really exciting. Lo Meng as well, and your Hung Guard teacher, Choi Chi Ling as well,
was in the movie as well.
So, what was that like?
Oh, well, you know, Lo Meng and I have worked together years ago in London. We worked for E17. We did a music video for E17, and we also did a music video for Drew Hill in London back in the day. And we flew Lo Meng and some people out from Hong Kong. It was a pretty big budget from Island Def Jam Records. And that was my first time working with them. Ironically, the entire time in Hong Kong, I never really met them. I mean, we went to functions, the Hong Kong Stuntmen's Association, Performing Artists Guild. I remember him sitting in front of me one time, but I didn't know him. And I just kept saying to myself, oh my God, that's Lo Meng. Yeah. You know? Fortunately, you know, when I came back to US, someone who knew him talked to him about me and was like, you know, Bobby's doing things in America. You should try and hook up with him. And we made the contact, and that's when we started in Europe, and we just kept working together ever since, you know? So I was happy that he wanted to do Made in Chinatown, because that was his first American film. You know, who wouldn't want to be responsible for the Toad's first American film. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a true honor. And Chu Chi Ling, he was my manager in Hong Kong for three and a half years when I first got there. So our history is connected through that, yeah. You know?
Because he's a Hunga master, isn't he? And I know that's your his whole family, style.
Yes, his whole family is Hunga, his father, Chu Kao, his mom. Very famous in Hong Kong. You know, I was fortunate enough to learn with them as well as him before they passed along. God rest their souls. But he's always been a supporter of me, you know, throughout the years. And, you know, he's migrated here to the U.S. now. So I think he lives in San Francisco.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, when I called, well, actually, it was funny how it happened. Huang Janli was casted for his role.
Wow.
But, yeah, he was Huang Janli was at the airport on his way to America to film, but the immigration department stopped him. And because he had did a seminar years ago and they paid him, he didn't pay taxes on that. And so they wouldn't allow him to come in until he straightened out his business.
No way.
Cameras were rolling, so production was still moving. And I'm like, oh my God, how can we fix this? So I thought about it. I said, who's here? Who's on this side of town? And then Chu Chi Ling, you know, Old Faithful. Yeah. So, Mr. I said, so, yo, man, can you help me out? He's okay, no problem, Bobby. I come.
That
was good. And in actuality, it was the first time that him and Lo Mong actually worked together on screen, you know?
Wow, so, they hadn't worked together then in all those
they had
years.
Not. So that was an honor for me to kind of join them on screen for the first time. Made in Chinatown fed a certain appetite, meaning it was a family-oriented film. It wasn't a bunch of cursing, no cursing. It's like The Last Dragon. It's just way out there. But it's fun, you know? It's very fun. And those guys, they're older now, you know? So I was forced with trying to show them, you know, have them do action, but I couldn't get them hurt because they're in their 70s now, you know what I mean?
I
just had to do it more so respectfully, as opposed to just, oh, let's do a show called Shaw Brothers and go to, you know, couldn't do that with them because they're older gentlemen now. So I had to do their performances with finesse, you know. Fortunately, I think it worked, but where it failed in some respects was with the diehard Hong Kong action crowd. It just didn't meet their appetite because they want to see that visceral Hong Kong style. And these are their heroes, you know. But I was forced with the decision. I can't be typecast. I can't fall into just because I worked in Hong Kong, I have to just do Hong Kong. This is a major motion picture with A-level actors, and I have to treat it as such. I have to be respectful with the content as with the actors. So that's where the juxtaposition came in with merging the two cultures. But fortunately, it worked.
And when it kicks off at the end, Jay Kwan, I don't know how you found that kid. I mean, he can certainly move. So it's
He's one on the rise. He's definitely on the rise, man. You know, I saw him in a bunch of short films. I think Vlad Rimbrock did something with him, a couple other people, and he just fit that character, you know?
Fish
out of water, trying to be something that he's not. Ultimately, what he needed was right in front of him, you know?
And I've got to say, because I know James Liu works with you on that movie, again, another, you know, a veteran of the American
Chinatown. I learned a lot from him, you know? He had just won an Emmy for Luke Cage, the TV series, you know, first stunt coordinator to win an Emmy. So he was coming in with some serious credentials, you know what I mean?
So,
you know, working to his level, I just had to make sure I dug deep. But he taught me so much, you know. I learned so much from James as to the Hollywood machine, how that really works, you know, because he's worked on nothing but A-level films, you know. So that was the best tutelage for me. And fortunately, you know, we built a very strong bond, and like we're brothers to this day. So
that was
co-directing the film with him was a true honor.
So where does it put you now then? Are you still actively looking at projects to direct currently?
For me, you know, I've been doing action films for 30 plus years, you know, in front of the camera, behind the camera. But my passion now as I get older is basically directing, you know. Mm-hmm. I'll do an occasional cameo here and there, you know, that sort of thing. I just finished, I'm actually being the lead in a film, Jugando con Fuego, which is on your IMDb.
Yeah, it's
doing very well right now. You know, we won pretty much every festival across the world: India, China, Japan, Korea. I just won Best Actor in New York, which is a tough area to win a Best Actor
award. Well done.
You know, it's a short film. It comes in at 40 minutes, but you know, hopefully, you know. Basically, I just wanted to show the audience, you know, as a lead, what I could do, you know, because out of the 30 years, I've co-starred with everyone, you know, so I've never really had a chance to just be the lead actor. So that was my first foray into being a lead actor. So, but primarily, I like to concentrate on directing now because it's a young man's game, you know, especially with the action, you know. I just had a birthday. I'm in my 50s now, you know. I'm not in bad shape or anything like that, but, you know, as I say, it's a young man's game, and it's my job to kind of help usher in the new generation of talent. You know, that's where I think I can give back most.
The cream piss.
Let's go back. Growing up in Philly, I believe.
Philadelphia.
I've been there. And my one trip to the States, I made it as far as Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And loved it. Did the run up the rocky steps, did all that stuff.
Yeah, everyone does that.
Yeah, yeah. So growing up in Philly, was martial arts a passion for you as a kid? What was your entry into that?
Yeah, so my aunt took me to see a film years ago when I was very young. I think I may have been like 10 or 11. It was called Five Fingers of Death with Lo Lay.
Of course.
And I knew the minute that, you know, I saw that before I saw Bruce Lee films. So that had the most indelible impression upon me. I mean, it just hit me like a wave. And I said, my God, this is it. This is the career path. I want to do this. I looked at my aunt. I said, this is what I'm going to do when I grow up. She was like, stop it. There's no way. You know, I said, no, I want to do these kind of movies. She's like, these are Chinese people. I said, I know, but I still want to do these kind of movies, you know? And so ironically, the first big film that I did in Hong Kong was with the very actor, Lo Lay, that I was watching on screen. That was Hong Fuk Chai Tien, which is Gambling Ghosts in English. Yeah. That was my first film with Sammo. And that was just loaded with all Hong Kong luminaries, James Tien, Mang Hoi.
Lan Ching Ying.
That was, oh my God, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I know I've been very fortunate. Lo Lay used to take me home every night from set because he actually lived not far from where I was staying.
Wow.
So, yeah, we talked about the stranger and the gunfighter and all that. And I had to pinch myself. I was like, oh my God, you know, this is amazing. But you know, after I saw that film, I said, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And so it was a guy in Philadelphia. His name was Maurice Tunstall, and he studied traditional Hungar in Chinatown in Philadelphia. And I remember going to him, and I started doing all this fake kung fu, you know, like a Bruce Lee imitations and stuff like that. And he was like, nah, that's not how you do. You want to learn real kung fu, I'll show you. And so that's where he began to kind of start showing me Hungar. And I just fell in love with it. And then I stayed with it for all those years, you know, from a teenager to a young adult. I kept training with him and kept training with him, all the while just telling him, I want to do kung fu movies, you know. He wanted me to take the traditional route, but, you know, you have your own path and what you want to do, you know. I didn't want to be a teacher. I just wanted to use the martial arts to facilitate, to get me to Hong Kong. So I could be able to do the action that they do, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, Bobby, I'm surprised that you found a Hungar teacher in Philadelphia in what was that, the 70s?
That was the late 80s.
Oh, late 80s.
Late 80s, yeah.
What were the options open to you if you wanted to study martial arts? I guess before the kung fu boom, it was just karate, was it?
It was karate, it was judo, aikido, things of that nature, you know? They had a couple of places in Chinatown, but they were not really friendly toward Americans, you know?
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't until I studied with Maurice, and Maurice, you know, he was very well embedded in Chinatown, and he started introducing me to people. And then I started working in Chinatown. I started selling newspapers at the Chinese bookstore. Then I worked at the Chinese movie theater, selling popcorn and cleaning the theater, all to make sure that I was around that environment and learning the culture early, you know, because I knew what I wanted to do. So
you literally knew as soon as you saw King Boxer. We call that film King Boxer over here, but it's like, yeah, that's Five Fingers of Death is actually a much better title, I think.
Yeah.
you literally, so you knew as soon as you saw that movie, you were like, this is, I want to be in front of the camera. That was the dream.
That's correct. Yeah. Yep. I said, I want to work with these particular actors. Yeah. So wow. It was the goal. And then I had been watching films like The Black Dragon with Ron Van Cleef. Carl Scott's movies, A Hard Way to Die with Billy Chung, and all those films. And by me seeing an African American that had done the pioneers of Hong Kong cinema, I knew that I had a chance. You know, I said, if they can do it, I just got to put myself in a position and I'll be able to do it, because I can see now that it can be done from a black person. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, is that one-eyed bastard here? Who the hell are you? You dare call our boss that?
Can I dive a little bit into that? Because you were going to 42nd Street and you were there in the thick of it in New York, watching these kung fu movies when they were coming out, you know, during the height of, you know, the kung fu boom.
That's right. I was very young, but my father and mother, my father and mother, they divorced when I was very young at two. My mother was still in Philly, but I kept going to my father's in New York. My father was the first black banker on Wall Street. So he was very wealthy, and we lived at the Dakota where John Lennon was killed. Actually, I was there that day when John Lennon got killed. I just didn't realize the magnitude of what's going on. You know, Roberta Flack used to babysit me. Al Pacino, Lauren Bacall, Leonard Bernstein—they were all living in that facility. You know what I'm saying?
And I didn't.
You know, so. Yeah. My dad would always, you know, because he worked all the time, he knows I like kung fu movies. So he would have somebody drive me over to 42nd Street, and I would just, for the whole day, in and out of theaters, just kept watching kung fu movies all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
so they showed them in double bills, didn't they?
And they showed double and triple bills. Yeah. Amazing. Dirty theaters, just, you know.
Yeah.
Porn on one side, kung fu on the other, you know?
I'm reading a book about this at the moment, and there is a thing, it's easy to glamorize this or have rose-tinted spectacles on when you look back at these things, because that is a period of time that just won't be repeated, because New York is completely different now, particularly around there.
It's an era that's gone. It'll never happen again, you know? Yeah. And I was very fortunate to be able to experience that, you know, very fortunate.
Yeah. Can you paint us a picture then, Bobby? What was it like going in and you're watching, I guess, maybe Shaw Brothers movies, Bruce Lee movies, or the Bruceploitation movies were big as well, weren't they?
They were. Ho Sung Tao, Bruce Lee.
Yeah,
there were so many Bruces, you know, so many derivatives of Bruce Lee, you know.
Yeah.
But for me, it was always the Shaw Brothers. The Shaw Brother, and then later Golden Harvest. Those were the ones that had the most impression upon me. Bruce Lee, of course, he had an impression on everyone. But I kind of was, it was about the Chinese culture. It was about Shaw Brothers, because King Boxer was my first influence. So by Masters of Death and Savage Five, those were two of my favorites. D-Lung, David Chang, you know, those are my favorite duos. You know, Fu Sheng, I loved him beyond words. You know, I'm very fortunate now to be friends with his family. You know, I talk to his brother, Cheng Ping, every other day.
Oh, great.
Him and I are best friends, you know. So that was an honor, but you know, you don't realize how life, the course that life treats you, you know. Here I am, a kid from the ghetto, because West Philly is a ghetto, you know.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure that I made it out of the ghetto and made it to the pinnacles of Hong Kong cinema, you know.
Kung fu movies have always been so popular with the black community.
That's correct.
And I'm just wondering your take. Why do you think that was, that there was such a strong connection between, you know, kung fu cinema that was coming out of Hong Kong, other side of the planet, and the African-American community? What's your view on that?
So my view on that is that it afforded us to see people in the lead that weren't Caucasian and that had the same sort of plights that we had. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we kind of levitated and gripped onto that, and brotherhood. And, you know, we're always like, yo, what's up, bro? You know me? And that kind of thing. And then Cheng Che, most of his films were built on the heroic brotherhood theme. If you really paid it. David Chang and all the five guys, it's all about heroic brotherhood. And so we could identify with that to a degree, you know, and just the martial arts and just being able to escape and, and understand what that there's heroes that could reflect our images, that sort of thing. And so we just latched onto it, man. That's why RZA now, you know, with the Wu-Tang, and he's parlayed that into his overall brand now, you know?
Absolutely.
So those films have had the most indelible impression, I think, on the African-American community, more so than any other community.
Yes.
Because we've accepted every level of it. Remember, there was the first generation with the Jimmy Wang Yus and the one-armed swordsmans, and then you had your D-Lung and David Changs, and then you had your five guys, your five boys, Lo Mong, and those guys. You know, each generation, we supported each one, and we rode with every single director that made these films, you know? And to this day, we still love those films. It hasn't changed.
Because Hong Kong producers were savvy, and they knew the following they were getting within, you know, the theatres that were being showing these movies in New York or wherever. And then you get, Ron Van Cleef, Black Dragon, and then you've got the mix of the blaxploitation and the kung fu, and it all goes together.
Right, and that was another thing. Seraphim Karalexis, who was the brains behind the Black Dragon trilogies, he was smart. He knew that the Asian martial arts films were having a big impact in the Black communities, and that a lot of the dollars that were being generated from these movies were coming from the urban areas. So much so to the point where he was like, hey, wait a second, why don't we just figure out something? And hence Ron Van Cleef was the first. He set the tone. He gave us our blueprint. And subsequently after him, then it was Carl Scott. So he was the next one to give us our blueprint.
And then Jim Kelly.
Yeah. Jim Kelly, can't leave him out, you know. I don't want to say me, and I ain't the ego guy, but, you know, I guess I would be included in there somewhere, you know.
Well, first African-American stunt performer to join the Hong Kong Stuntman Association. I mean, that's quite an amazing
I'm the first and only.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting to see if there's a Black guy that's going to come behind me and join the guild. But so far, I'm the only African-American Hong Kong stuntman, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what a privilege. I mean, that's a cool.
It catches me sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
I've killed many men with this pole, but still, I don't want to kill you yet.
After I was learning traditional kung fu, then I started just watching movies and mimicking the action in the movies to learn the timing of how Chinese martial artists did it for film. And once I realized that I had that pretty much down pack, I'll never forget it. I was like, now I got to get there. And so that's where I knew that I couldn't just afford the flights, because they were just tremendously expensive, you know, to keep going back and forth. And I'll never forget it. A group of my friends, they went to the airport. They were all going for jobs, and I wasn't going for a job. And then, you know, they was like, well, you should fill out one too. I said, all right, whatever. So then I started talking to airline employees. They was like, well, you know, if you work for us, you can fly anywhere for free. And that, bing, what? For free? All right, give me the application. So I filled it out. I worked for a security company in the airport for about 2 or 3 years. I wasn't hired by the airlines, but I greeted all the managers every day. And subsequently, one day a manager came through and he was like, I like you. You speak to us every day. You're very cordial. Have you ever thought about working for us directly? And that was it. Never forget that. He said, be in my office tomorrow morning. U.S. Airways hired me directly, which allowed me to get those flight privileges. And that's really when everything kind of changed. Everything changed.
And you managed to wangle it so that you could get to Hong Kong from the States then, and you could just keep making trips out there. That's amazing.
I worked for U.S. Air about 5 years before everything really started kicking off. But what I did was the first year I got hired, I took the vacation and I just jumped on a plane and went to Asia just to say I did it. You know, I didn't really meet too many people, but just.
How old were you then, Bobby?
Oh, I was, I want to say 27, 26, 27.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was in my 20s at that point. And so I did it, came back the following year. You know, every year you accumulate more weeks and weeks. And then I stayed for 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. Finally, I met Chu Chi Ling. And Chu Chi Ling started taking me auditions in Hong Kong and things of that nature. And he got me some roles, but nothing really panned out. A couple things I did, they ended up cutting the footage. I just thought that, you know, it ain't going to work. One day I was with him and I went into the bathroom. I'll never forget it, in Hong Kong. And when I went into the bathroom, there was a guy in there. And as I'm at the sink washing my hands, I look up in the mirror and I'm looking at him and I said, wait a second. That's the guy from Duel of the Iron Fist. Cheng Che. Paul Chang, Cheng Hong Yip, right? You know, he always plays the comedy role. And I said, what the heck? I said, Cheng Hong Yip. He was like, oh, how do you know my name? You know, and you said it in Chinese. I said, 我是公关的话. He was like, what, you speak Chinese? I said, 哎呀,我是公关的话. You know, that kind of thing. He was like, oh my God, I've never seen a black guy. He said, what are you doing here in Hong Kong? I said, well, you know, I'm here. I'm trying to get into movies and everything. He was like, what? He said, well, who's helping you? And then I told him Chu Chi Lang. And then he was like, yeah, Chu Chi Lang is well known. He's like, but I don't know if he's going to get you where you need to be. Mm-hmm. He said, I'll tell you what, you meet me tonight at the Nikko Hotel, and I have a surprise for you. So that night I met him. I went to the hotel. And the first person that walked through the door was Chen Quan Tai.
Yes. And I was like, legendary showrunner star.
Right. Yeah. I was blown away. You know, I'm like, oh my God.
Boxer from Shantung.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that just caught me off guard. Next thing you know, Paul walks in. He's like, yeah, you recognize him? I said, oh my God. Yes, I do. You know?
Yeah.
And then Samuel walked in and I almost fainted. I kid you not. I almost fainted.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. So I had all these photos with me. I'll never forget it. And Samuel sat down. We all had coffee. And then I showed Samuel the photos, and Paul told Samuel what I wanted to do. He's looking at the photos. He's like, oh, okay. But he seemed just like not interested in anything that I was showing him, right? And he said a statement. He said, can you fight? I said, yeah. He said, can you fight four or five guys at a time? And I said, well, I'm not you, but I can, you know, that sort of thing, you know. Because I had seen him just lay waste to 20, 30 people, right? So he was like, oh, okay, cool. So then we start talking shop and everything a little bit more. And then he gets up and he says, I got to go. And so he leaves. Oh, I was crestfallen. I actually thought that I made a bad impression on him, you know. So then Paul was like, it's okay. Don't worry. You know, I think he likes you. And so he was like, look, let's go to eat. So he says, we got to meet one other person. So that night we go to Chim Sai Choi. Was it Chim Sai Choi? Yeah, Chim Sai Choi. And we're having a meal. And in walks Lily Lee, who I had the biggest crush on when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
But that was Paul's former girlfriend from back in the day, right? And I'm like, oh my God, Lily Lee. So it's Chen Quan Tai, Lily Lee, Paul, me. We sit down, we eating, and I'm just like, I'm trying to.
Yeah, you must have been like, it's all your Christmases at once.
Dude, I was like floored, you know?
Yeah,
I've seen these guys on screen as a child, you know? And here I am eating with them, right? So then the phone rings, and it's Samo. And then I could hear Paul say, I go, Dima. They're like, what's going on? And he's like, okay, hoa, moment haya, which means no problem. Huh? I'll tell him. And so he hung up, and I'm looking at him like, he's like, that was Samo. He said, yeah, he's changing the ending of the movie he's doing right now, and he wants you to be the villain. And I just really, I pretty much passed out. He's because I my head dropped in my food. He's like, say, Bobby, you okay? You okay? I said, I gotta get a grip. So, yeah.
And that movie was Gambling Ghost?
That was Hong Fook Chai Tin, yeah. The director was Clifton Ko-Chi-Sam. But it was an all-star cast. Like, if you go they just threw me right into the mix, man. And so my first night on set, I was just so freaking nervous, you know? Yeah. I looked to my left, it's Yuen Biao, it's James Tin from Bruce Lee's movie, Lam Ching Ying, and Mang Hoi with Bruce Lee the rope to him. Yeah, I mean, it's just... it's just luminaries every Chung Fa, just everywhere, right?
Young man, you're dreaming. Take me. You're joking.
Real quick story for Gambling Ghost. I finished filming that film a week early. The producers owed me $5,000. They were like, well, can you, since we finished early, can you forfeit the money? And I think that was the best decision I've ever made in my life, which has probably gotten me to this point in this interview with you. Yeah. I said, sure, let me speak to Samo. So I walked over to Samo and I said, excuse me, sir. He said, yeah. I said, well, we finished early. The producers, you know, they owe me 5,000 US. They kind of want me to forfeit the money. I said, I told him I'll forfeit the money on one condition. He said, well, what's the condition? I said, if you just allow me to work with you again in the future, I said, the money doesn't matter. I don't want the money. If you just give me an opportunity to work with you again, you know? And he was like, you willing to forfeit that money just to work with me? I said, absolutely, 100%. He looked at me. He said, all right, deal.
Yeah.
So I gave up the money. I went back when I was going to be laid off. I called Sammo and I said, they're going to lay me off. He's like, no, catch the first plane out here. So I caught the first plane out. But what I did was something slick because I knew that at this point, I didn't have the airline job anymore to help facilitate the movement and that it was all or nothing. So I bought a one-way ticket. I didn't even buy a round trip because I was not coming back to the United States until I was a success.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
That's how it happened. I got there. Sammo took me to the immigration department. They put me on file. Most Americans can only stay for 30 days. But because I was under contract as Sammo's English teacher, I had a work permit. So I could stay as long as I wanted and worked and everything, you know.
Amazing.
So
amazing.
I never forget it. Sammo was moving out of a $7 million house into a multi-million dollar house. And he was like, well, you stay at the $7 million until it's sold. And, you know, when that's sold, then you can move in with me. Man, oh, man, you're talking about walking around, you know. So I took care of the house until it was sold. Yeah. And after it was sold, I ended up moving into his house. And I shared a room with his son, Jimmy. It was just amazing, man. You know,
yeah.
For him to open his home to an African-American, that was different, too.
So, Bobby, how did you learn the language so sort of quickly then? Was that just from going back and forth to Hong Kong, working in Chinatown? I mean, you picked it up?
Yeah. That was part of it, but what really did it was I kind of self-taught myself. From the time I was young until then, until I decided to go, I was self-teaching myself how to speak Cantonese, not Mandarin. Cantonese. Yeah. I would mimic it, and by working in the community, I learned certain things, you know. But it really wasn't until I got to Hong Kong where I got the firmest grasp. But I did have enough of it where I shocked people, you know. They were like, wait a second. What the hell, you know? And they said, you know, you don't have any tone or anything, you know? And they were like, most Americans, you know, they speak Mandarin. They're like, oh, sitgong. I don't speak it. It's a little too difficult. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They were just shocked that I could learn the nine tones for Cantonese, you know? So yeah, self-taught. And then by living there, I just gained a better knowledge of it, you know? But nobody is as good as Mark Hart. Mark was like
He's been there for years and years, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, you know, he's my daigor, my big
boy. Yeah. So, yeah, but it's one thing, I guess, knowing the language, that's going to put you at a certain advantage. But you've got to keep up with Sammo, and you have a pretty meaty fight scene with Sammo at the end of Gambling Ghost. So, you know, I mean, talk about thrown in at the deep end.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you find just that experience and his choreography? Because he's the best movie choreographer out there.
That's correct.
To my money, the best.
Absolutely the best. So at the time, he had one other student. His name was Colin Cho, Nai Sing. He assigned him to me. And the ironic part is we were the same age and we had the same birthday. And we were both Sammo's students, you know. And so our brotherhood was like really tight, and he couldn't speak any English. So I used to always tell him, I'm going to teach you English, man, because I'm telling you, if you ever get to the United States and you learn English, you'll be a superstar.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Look what happened. Look what happened.
Yeah.
But that particular night, and something ironic happened that night. There was a series of 16 punches combination set that I had to do in Gambling Ghost, and I kept messing it up. There's another word I like to use, but I'll just say I kept messing it up. You know what I'm saying?
It's okay to swear on this. It's
right.
Fine.
Yeah. And I was just so like, I started breaking out cold sweats and everything. And I remember Sammo told Nai Sing, he was like, work with Bobby, get him down. And I kept trying that from 12 o'clock at night to like 2 a.m. And Sammo would just read the newspaper. When I thought I was ready, he would come over, do the messed up again. He'd go back to reading his newspaper. I asked him years later why he didn't get upset at me that night, you know? Mm. And he's like, I didn't get upset at you at that night because you never quit. You just kept trying until you got it. And he said that meant more to me than anything. So I'm not going to beat you up when you keep trying. You know what I'm saying?
And that
meant a lot, you know, because I really messed up on there. But you know, I finally got it.
And Bobby, we've seen evidence, there's behind the scenes stuff of, you know, Jackie Chan berating some of the stunt people for not getting the timing. You know, it's the timing is so crucial. So, you know, the fact that, you know, you impressed Sammo enough and then obviously for him to use you again in his movies, you know, that he must have seen something in you.
Yeah, I thought that it was over after Gambling Ghost. I really did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really did. But he ended up calling me. He came to New York to buy a house in Old Westbury one time. He said, pick me up at the airport. I was shocked, you know. I went and picked him up at the airport, got him all set up there. And that's the time when Yuen Biao came to the United States. And Yuen Biao is the one who named me Bobby. Bobby Long is what they call me, Bobby the Dragon. Because yeah. I'll never forget, we were riding horses, and Yuen Biao was saying, well, you need a screen name, you know. He was like, I'll tell you what, we're going to call you Bobby. Bobby Long, Bobby the Dragon. And that's kind of how it took off, you know. And yeah. I kept it. I mean, Yuen Biao call you Bobby Long, you're Bobby Long. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not worse, you know.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Good. Good. You're clever. But not clever enough, because now you will die. Hey.
Because you got to know Sammo so well, as you say, you lived with him as well. He put you up in his house.
Yes.
You were his bodyguard. Is that right? I read that somewhere. Or that was that a media thing?
What happened was, the first year that I lived with him, I really wasn't doing any action films at all. I was watching all the Westerners work and do action, and I wasn't. I was just living with Sammo. I was his assistant at the time. Yeah. So whatever he needed, I took care of. Wherever he needed to go, I was with him no matter what. And we did that for a whole year. No work.
That's early 90s, 1991. Yeah, yeah.
Correct. And I'm just with him. But what happened was, just by being with him, gave me an exorbitant amount of exposure, to the point where if I wasn't with him and I went to a supermarket, because, you know, the media was always taking photos of us, you know, we were on magazine covers and everything. Of course, they start sensationalizing everything, but they were like, oh, that's the black guy. That's the black guy. That's with Sammo, you know. But as with anything and how media works, and they started sensationalizing, saying that, you know, the triads hired this black guy to bodyguard Sammo Hung.
Yeah.
You know, and we were at the 13th Golden Horse Awards, which is their Academy Awards. And I'm sitting there next to Yun Duk, who won for Fong Sai-yuk, Best Action Director. And this guy named Lewis came up to me. He was a Western guy from Europe, from England, I think. He's passed on right now. I know he did pass away. But he walked up. He says, Bobby Samuels. And I say, oh, okay, I don't know you. But he says, oh, so tell me, is it true? I'm like, well, what is it? He says, well, they say that you are hired because Sammo, your bodyguard for Sammo, for the triads to protect him. Is that true? And then I'm like, I ain't want to talk about it, but, you know, I'm not going to say anything, you know. I just kind of rode with it, you know. Give me a little extra push out here, you know.
Yeah.
So, that was funny. But I wasn't his bodyguard. He wasn't in any trouble with the triads. He was like my godfather. He was like, you know, took me under his wing and taught me everything I knew.
What's he like personally then? I mean, because I get the impression, well, obviously you'll know this more than most, but the stories I hear, when he's on set, he is the boss and everyone looks up to him, and it's very much like Sammo's in charge. But personally as well, I mean, you know, what's he like as a guy to like just hang out with? I mean, is he
he's a very cool guy. He has, he's a comedian. So every time, he's always doing something funny, and just, he'll give you the shirt off his back, you know. He's just the kindest individual. But when it comes to movies and working on a movie set, he is Daigol. He is the biggest. He's over Jackie. He's over everybody. He is the man, you know. And he's to be respected as such because of his knowledge and because of his skill sets, you know. he's different than everybody else. He really is. And people understand it. Now, he has a temper, as with, you know, the rest of them. They all have tempers, you know?
Yeah.
But when Sammo goes there, he goes there. And he can put the fear of God in you, you know?
Yeah.
If you don't know him, you know? But by me living with him and seeing him every day and spending time and his mother fixing me food every day. And, you know, I would go on dates and I would bring the date home and they would show me how to serve her. And if I wasn't doing it right, you know, get the true education of Chinese culture. Wow. I knew a different person, you know, I knew a kind man. I wasn't fearful of him at all. You know what I mean? I knew, but I didn't want to mess up the mystique of who he was, you know, and how people felt about him. So I kept, you know, a lot of my memories and things to myself, you know, but always putting forward him first, you know, like my loyalty is to Sammo. Even when I work with Yuen Wu Ping and Alfred Cheung and all these other Hong Kong directors, I had to actually go to him first and say, by God, can I work for these people? Because when you're in when you follow a certain stunt group, Ongaban, you know, as opposed to the rest of them, you gotta show respect. I'm loyal. That's my allegiance.
Yeah. He's your Sifu in a way, isn't he? I mean,
Yes, he is.
Yeah, yeah. And it's an interesting time, the 90s, for Sammo, because his career had slightly, I know, because he left Golden Harvest in the early 90s.
Yes.
And then he's branching out on his own. He sets up his own company in the early 90s. But he wasn't having a lot of like commercial success like he was having. Or the press is, you know, they like a good story and a rivalry with Jackie and all of this stuff. Jackie's, you know, his career is taking off as Sammo's career is slightly on the downside at that time. How much of that is true? How much of that is just, you know, the press?
So it's never really to the point where Jackie and Sammo are really, really like at odds, you know, they're brothers. Yeah. Your brothers, you fight, you get over it, you move on, you know? I'm gonna give you a clear example. I was scheduled to do Rumble in the Bronx. Sammo calls me into the office. He says, Bobby, I talked to Jackie. He wants you for Rumble in the Bronx. I had just finished Momin Bay, Don't Give a Damn. And now I'm like going to work. I'm like, oh my God, I just worked with such and such. Now I get to work with such and such, you know? And he was like, so, you know, just get yourself ready. I'll never forget that. And then the following day, he calls me in the office. He's like, Jackie made me mad. You're not doing the movie. What?
Wow.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But, you know, I'm with Sammo. I live with him. I'm not going to go against him. You know what I mean? So I have to just kind of go along with the flow. You know, it is what it is. And it was probably for the best anyway, you know, which ended up being when Rumble was released and Don't Give a Damn. Actually, they were side by side in the theaters in Hong Kong. And that was just ironic. I was like, wow, I'm in this one. I could have been in this one, but, you know. That's how their rivalry is, you know, that sort of thing. No matter what, there's never bad blood between Jackie and Sammo. There's disagreements, as with all brothers, they go through things, but never any love lost.
And the irony is that Sammo, when he got his career sort of back on track, it was partly due to Jackie, because I know Jackie got him into Thunderbolt as action director. He then got him directing Mr. Nice Guy. So there were these favors, things that Jackie was handing to Sammo to then get, you know, Sammo's career.
He was latching him on to the American film system and getting him exposure. Yeah. So that a lot of American directors, and then I remember Double Team with
Van Damme,
where he did the one action sequence, which was just blazing, you know. I think it was probably one of Van Damme's best performances, you know, working with Sammo on that. And that started giving him the exposure, and then the martial law series and things of that nature, you know. And then everything else just changed. He was on a rise at that point, you know. Everyone goes through those career lulls, you know. I happened to be there for one of the lulls, and it was very difficult. You know, the business had kind of dried up. The movies weren't being done like they were being done in Hong Kong. Investors were a little bit skittish, you know what I mean? I remember going to many meetings with Sammo where investors from Taiwan and Malaysia would come in, and you know what I mean? That sort of thing. So it was a difficult time for him, absolutely. But, you know, he made it through the storm, and he just rose from there, and he hasn't looked back.
Inspector, your swordplay has much improved.
Has it?
Your spear skill is better too.
You touched on Don't Give a Damn. This is a movie that I can't see getting a Blu-ray reissue anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's a shame because obviously this is a movie that reunites, you know, Sammo and Yen Bu. I believe Jackie was supposed to be in that movie as
he
well.
Was.
Is there truth
he
to
was.
That? Yeah, yeah.
He was.
I think
was.
Takeshi Kaneshiro got that role. Is that right?
Kaneshiro got it. Correct. Yeah. Kaneshiro. Yeah. It was a pleasure working for him too. Working with him.
Your thoughts on making that movie?
Yeah, that movie. That was the first movie that Sammo would, like, it was a dry spell, you know, wasn't getting any work, things like that. And the investors that put up the money for that movie, they were related to the scriptwriter. And the scriptwriter didn't particularly care for me at all. And it kind of transcended in how he wrote my character and the characters around me at the time. You know, there were some racial elements involved there, racial elements, and you know, it really wasn't cool. I'll just say that. You know, that was something that I had to kind of deal with. That was a rough time for me to have to see that. You know, as an African American, and have it be attached to my project. It was funny because several of the scenes that they shot. Dealing with the racial element, Sammo wasn't there. Sammo was gone. He had to go back to the U.S. and there was a second unit director that did that. And Sammo was livid once it was finished, you know? But because the movie's finances were tied together with the writer and it just, we really didn't have a leg to stand on with how the movie was presented.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took a while for me to explain that to a lot of Western people who just thought that Sammo just went rogue and just, you know, oh, is he a racist and all that there? But no, Yen Biao, none of them are, you know?
Because this is what's so fascinating about Sammo is, you know, for fight choreography and he's such a pioneer in the way that he films, shoots action. I mean, the guy is legendary. What's fascinating about his film career are these moments there where it's there's definitely some problematic elements to his filmmaking as well.
Yeah.
That film being a case in point. There are others in the filmography as well, which are not, you know, not politically correct, shall we say.
What made me feel better is that I'll never forget it when the premiere of it that night, they were, you know, a lot of people were disconcerted behind what they saw, you know. Mina really was upset, Sammo's wife, you know, she was like my sister. She really was she didn't really particularly care about, you know, for that particular scene. But everyone came up to me at the end of the film, Yen Wu-Ping, everybody, they were like, don't let none of that destroy your performance.
Yeah.
You were badass in the movie, plain and simple. And, and just know that you were good. And that had nothing to do with you. That's just how people are sometimes in films and subject matters get tackled, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I embraced that. And I kept my head held high and I just explained it from a logical point of view. That's all.
Yeah.
I did not want anyone to think that Sammo was a racist because, I mean, he let me live in his home. He took care of me, you know? I didn't have any money. I didn't have anything. He paid for everything. He did everything for me, you know?
Yeah.
Clothes that I could buy, because I'm a big American. They didn't sell the kind of clothes I needed. He would have them shipped in from overseas for me, you know? Shoes, I couldn't, my feet were so big. He'd have them brought in from America. Like, you know, he's not a racist at all.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so that was my goal behind that movie, was to make sure that I showed that the Hong Kong movie system is what brought that about, not Sammo per se. Yeah, they took advantage of him because he was at a lull in his career and he was trying to raise money for a film to get a comeback. And, you know, sometimes you just got to grow in order to get what you want, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are you still in touch with Sammo? Is he still a good buddy of yours?
Yes. Yeah. He's doing really well. He's doing really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's in Shanghai, and I'll never forget. You know, and it was we were at the airport picking up his son. It was 1996, And he said, you know, Bobby, he says, how much longer are you going to stay in Hong Kong? Because there's really, there's nothing else I can do for you here. Like, you've mm-hmm. reached the pinnacle of your career here. You have a choice. You can stay here. I'm not telling you to leave. You can stay here. But as you see, the movie business is going down. Everything is going up to China now. It's not the same. I think, you know, maybe you might want to go back. And I thought about it. And I said, you know, you may be right. Because I'm at the height of my career here right now. Because I started doing non-action films. I actually started doing regular movies. I had the first on-screen romance with a Chinese actress in Hong Kong. And first time they ever let that happen, an African-American. So, yeah. You know, my audience started changing from action films into regular films. And I said, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe now is the time for me to come back to the United States. And so that's what I did. I came back to the United States. And then I started my career here. But what I didn't realize is that my films had been viewed on the underground here while I was gone. And I worked on a film called Ultimate Master. I'm sitting in the passenger side of a van out in front in New York. And I'm watching three guys walk down the street toward me, and I recognize them. And then they just look at me, and they're like, Bobby Samuels. And I'm like, how do you know? And I'm looking. It's Adam Yauch. It's the Beastie Boys.
Wow.
And I'm like, what the hell? They say, yeah, we knew you was in town. We heard you was here. We came down. We want to take a picture. You know what I mean? We're fans of yours. And I was like, oh, my God. Are you kidding me? He was like, yeah, your movies are playing over here all the time. I was like, you know, and that was it was the smartest decision I made to go to another country.
Just while we're in Hong Kong, though, a quick shout out for Red Wolf as well, working with Yen Wu-Ping. We just need to talk about him.
Yes.
Another legendary director, fight choreographer, Drunken Master, yes. Snake in the Shadow. My God, there's too many films to mention.
Yes.
Working with Yen Wu-Ping, I mean, what was that like?
Wow. Yeah. So how it happened was I'm in the office, and Sam was like, oh, yeah, my son's godfather wants to work with you. He never told me the name. He was like, they want you to meet him at the park. He wants to see you, audition you, and that little stunt team that you created, he wants them to come too.
The Guaylo 7, is that what they were called?
G7,
you created a stunt group, the G7.
The first Western stunt team in Hong Kong history.
Who was in that?
It was Mike Miller, it was me. It was Michael Lambert. It was Happy Heskey. Happy Heskey ended up working with him and Mr. Nice Guy and Van Damme and The Quest. Yeah. And we got actually signed to Art House Productions with Simon Yam, Yam Dak Wah, same company.
Yeah.
And that was Roy Miller, Roy Filler. That was his name. He was there. He became a Ford model. But it was the first time a Hong Kong production group had signed Western actors to a contract. And Yuen Woo-ping's movie was the first film that we were all under contract with. Yeah, so, but I never forget when I showed up and I saw him, like, oh my God, this is Yuen Woo-ping. Are you kidding me? So everybody's auditioning and everything. And then he was like, Bobby. And so I did what I did. He was like, okay. And he was like, you're all hired. And that was amazing. That was just simply amazing. And then he told me what the film was. It was loosely based along the lines of Speed. You know,
it's a sort of under siege terrorist takeover a boat.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And that was an honor, man. And every day, you know, Yuen Woo-ping, because he smoked Marlboro Lights the same as me at the time, and he would come over to me and says, "Oh, Bobby, cigarettes," and that kind of got me. And then he had a fascination with my hair because I had the same plug on my head that I had from Don't Give a Damn, because I was going from one set to the next. Nysing and I both, we were both in Don't Give a Damn, and we were like, all right, let's go. There's a car ready for us to transport us to Yuen Woo-ping. So it was just around the clock work for us. And I'll never forget one day Yuen Woo-ping came over to me and he started hitting my hair, touching my hair. And he was like, Bobby, I said, yes. He said, they want me to do a film in America. I said, okay, I think you should do it. He's like, I don't know, you know. He said, I said, well, what is it? He was like, some film of Matrix or some nonsense. I don't know. I'll think about it. I said, listen, I think you should do it. I think you should do it. If you ever get a chance, you know, work in the U.S., just do it. And I never realized that.
No one knew that was going to be as
right,
bad as it was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I told Colin that day. I said, listen, I'm going to show you English, but you're going to have to master it when I leave, man. You got to stay and do English, man. If you do it, I promise you will be a superstar in America. And look what ended up happening to him.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. Do you miss Hong Kong? Do you go there much still?
I don't go there now. Reason being is because
it's very different now. It's very, very different.
You know, I was very fortunate. Like Mark Harton, Cynthia Rothrock, all of them, they were part of that initial golden wave of Hong Kong. Bruce Fontaine, golden wave of Hong Kong. Vincent Lin, they were all a part of that. So they did the 80s straight through up into like the early 90s. And then that's when I came in. I was the 90s generation of Hong Kong cinema. Everyone always kind of groups us all together, but I'm proud to say they are older than me.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're right. I mean, Cynthia's there kicking ass in the mid-80s.
So, in the 80s. And I wasn't nowhere near Hong Kong then. Yeah. I didn't get to Hong Kong. I think the first time I landed in Hong Kong, and that was U.S. Air, just to test the waters, land. That was 89.
Yeah.
That was 89. Wow, that was the first time I entered. But nothing started for me in Hong Kong until 90, 91, and subsequent years later from that point.
You see, I just want to kill you like dogs.
Now, a lot of the films that were being done, I was there, you know. That's Korean, the bodyguard from Beijing.
Yeah,
the basement scene went nice. They had Cody standing. I'm standing right there on the side while he's fighting Jet Li. Like, him and I are brothers, you know, same birthday, same age. Like, we were inseparable in Hong Kong. I owe him the most for helping me get through a lot of the hard work in Hong Kong. He really helped me.
And so good as well, even in, he's Flashpoint as well. That Donnie Yen movie.
He's so good.
He's such a kind guy, too. Yeah. So who impressed you the most outside of Sammo? The people that you met and worked with in Hong Kong? Because you did meet Lam Ching Ying as well. We should mention him.
I worked with him.
Lam Ching Ying, yeah.
Yeah, I worked with him in Gambling Ghosts.
Yeah.
He was very... Yeah. Sammo always told me, he was like, Lam Ching Ying, oh my God. I'm like, really? He's like, he's the best. Number one. I was like, what? He was like, his Wing Chun cannot be touched.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. And then I'll never forget it, when we were on Gambling Ghosts, I was like, you know, it's an honor to meet you. He was like, really? I said, come on, let's go. And then he took me to lunch every day. I was like, oh my God, this is incredible, you know? He's talking about Prodigal Son and things of that nature.
Wow.
But who I was really close with out there, there was a clique of us, and it was always the group. It was Sammo, it was Colin Cho, nice thing.
Yeah.
It was Leung Kai Yan, Beardy, as they saw. Leung Kai Yan.
Yeah, Leung Kai Yan. Yeah.
Him and Sammo were best.
Yeah, they're very close.
Inseparable.
Yeah, yeah.
Every single day. I call him uncle, you know. So, Cho Wing, him, me. And Lau Ka Wei, Lang's brother.
Yeah.
The group, you know, they're all Sammo's like closest allies. And so, those were the people who I hung with every single day. But people that would come to the office every day, Chong Fa, Cheng Yongsheng, you know, just, I can't even begin to tell you everybody that walked through the office every day, you know.
Just legends, the cream of the crop.
I never forget, I went to Planet Hollywood for a meeting, and nobody was in there. I got there early. And then the only person that walked in was Anita Moy. And like,
wow,
I had the hugest crush on her, you know, I mean, imaginable. And I'll never forget that. And she's like, hello, how are you? And I'm like, oh my God, you speak English too, wonderful. And then we started talking, and then I told her who I was and why I was here with Sammo and everything. She was very, very kind, you know.
Yeah.
And but everybody knows that, you know, the situation that happened with her happened at Sammo's club, Take One, in Hong Kong.
That's right. Yeah. Have you seen the biopic? They've made a biopic of her life. I saw it recently.
No, I didn't. Yeah. I definitely want to see that.
It's good. Yeah, it does show that that sequence. It's a love letter to Hong Kong as well, and Hong Kong movies and the culture there. It's a nice movie. I was blubbering as well. Just everyone was crying in the cinema.
I mean, she was such a warm person, you know?
Yeah.
Charisma. Yeah. You know how they say when Bruce Lee walked into a room, it just got silent. It's just charisma that just came off of him. That was the same for her.
Yeah.
She just exuded that charisma and just a certain Zenae quality that yeah. nobody had, you know?
Yeah.
And it was actually through her that I met Leslie Cheung, you know?
Yeah.
Before he died, you know? So I was very fortunate to know these individuals. As an African-American guy from the ghetto, to make it to that level in Hong Kong, you know? I'll never, you know, I realize that there is a God.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that happens.
Yeah, it's an absolute, you know, dream come true kind of story, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you get back to the States then, okay, so this is post handover. So also, we should say that you're learning skills behind the camera when you're, you know, working with Sammo, aren't you? So you're assistant choreographer mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're developing skills mm-hmm. in those areas as well. Because I know you did start working behind the scenes a lot more when you landed. Was that your goal? Pretty much immediately to do that? Yeah.
So I knew that I was back here in the Americas and that I had to kind of like pay my dues in the director field to kind of get where I needed to be as a full-time director. Yeah. So when I came back, I met a guy, his name is Nick Quested. Most of you, he's actually his Goldcrest Studios. And they have a London office and they have one in New York. They're a post-production facility. And Nick was a big fan of Kung Fu movies.
Yeah.
And at the time, he was a big time music video director. He was like the number two next to Hype Williams, working with all the rap artists, you name it. And he was like, well, why don't you start working with me? And he hired me as a second unit director on music videos. So I did I did Paula Cole, Metallica, DMX, Eve, The Lox, E-17, Drew Hill. I did all Drew Hill stuff. I got a name for myself in that respect, being working in music videos. And then that parlayed into other films. I'll never forget this guy named John Lee. He came and he was right out of film school. And he was like, he wanted to do a film, a Korean gangster film in New York. It was called The Cut Runs Deep. And he didn't really know anybody. So I helped him cast the film. I helped direct the film, I have produced the film, and ended up becoming one of the highest grossing films in Korean box office history. Yeah. And it solidified John's career forever. He ended up doing another film which broke that box office record, and he's one of Korea's top directors now. So I was very honored to be a part of that. And then, you know, I just started doing small independent films, things of that nature, until I started getting opportunities to kind of do my own work.
We should mention The Corruptor as well, because I know you worked with Chow Yun-fat on that movie. Mark Wahlberg, obviously, in that movie.
And that was because of my allegiance in Hong Kong, you know. Friends of his, friends of mine, and they were like, with Chow's there, I met him in New York, and he was like, nope, from this point on, you're with me. So I was his assistant, interpreter. Wherever he went, I went, you know. That was crazy. That was a $40 million film. Oh my God. That was $40 million film. It was just huge production in New York City. Huge, mega huge production. So yeah, I was very fortunate to be his assistant in that too.
What's the dream project for you now then? Do you still have ideas, projects that you want to get off the ground?
Yeah, so there's really three that I want to do. The first one would be a remake of the Five Deadly Venoms, but use Western actors and use the existing Venoms as like the ones who teach them here in America to kind of draw it together. But, you know, use today's sensibilities with film, make it more Gotham-y as opposed to, you know what I mean? More ethnic involvement, a black kid, a white girl, Asian kid, a Latino, you know, make it more inclusive. And I think that could work. You know, Lo Mang, Lu Fang, Kwok Choi, they all want to be involved in that. It's just, you know, finding the right investors to want to fund something like that, you know. The second one would be what Stallone did. He did a very good idea when he did The Expendables. And I would like to do something with that for the martial artists from the 80s and 90s, and also include the new generation. I feel as though that's a formulaic type of a film that could continually go a one and a two and a three, you know, while we're all still alive, you know.
Yeah.
We'll do something, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's it, you know. Once everybody checks out, that you don't preserve history that way.
Yeah.
So I something loosely like that. And then I wanted to do a remake of Three the Hard Way.
The Jim Kelly.
Yeah. But use like Maurice Crump from the particular, you know, just updated to that level now.
Yeah.
So those are the three pet projects that I envision wanting to do.
Do you still get inspired by, you know, when you see martial arts movies nowadays?
So I just finished doing a film called Shadow Fist 2, which is basically an homage to Shaw Brothers. So it's real Shaw Brother-esque. But I see that's things have changed.
Yeah.
So right now it's about, you got wires, you got tricks. And I think that right now martial arts films leans a little bit too much toward the breakdancing, capoeira, tricking. They lean in a little bit too much to that and not so much pure martial arts. The only individual who I think right now has the right button is my big brother, Daigor, Andy Chang. He knows how to kind of like make it work, you know. Into the Badlands, still my number one series of all times, which I was hoping that they would, Netflix would pick it up from AMC and kind of continue that on, because that was really probably one of the best series that show Hong Kong style action with Western actors that I've ever seen done. Andy Chang really put his foot down with that, you know.
He worked on Shang-Chi as well. That's some great fight choreography in that.
I mean, he's brilliant. He's like number one in my book, you know. I talked to him. I said, listen, my bucket list before I get out of here.
Collaboration.
So we're in talks to kind of do something soon. But I just think that it's a phase right now. That everything is tricking, and you got to do three somersaults before you do a kick, all that stuff. But I want to keep the true essence of martial arts films still somewhat balanced and level in that respect. So that's why when I do films now, I just don't replicate Hong Kong action. I like to do films where martial arts is a footnote as opposed to it being just the premise.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can do fight scenes, you know, and they can be the best fight scenes. But if there's no story value, repetitively watching those fight scenes, eventually they'll go stale and you'll move on to, I want to see another fight scene. But I tend to lean myself to more story driven content, you know, as opposed to that. And that's kind of where I'm gearing in on now. You know,
you were involved in the golden age of Hong Kong action cinema. But that stuff is still really inspiring today. Like, you look at Chad Stahelski and his John Wick films.
Yes.
You know, he is directly referring back to the work of Sammo and Jackie.
Right.
So you must feel incredibly proud that you're a part of that history. It's history. You know, you're a part of that.
It's history. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I just don't – I'm not going to say I don't realize it or anything like that, but – others realize it and they be like, do you realize what you've done? And and like, seriously, like, wow, like you and you're still doing it, you know, 30 years later you're still doing action films. I mean, wow, you know,
incredible. Yeah,
you know, I realize I'm fortunate, and I and again, that's why I like to pay it forward now, you know. And help young people, because, you know, no one beats Father Time. Let's just face it, Father Time is the heavyweight champ, the middleweight champ, the featherweight champ. That's it. Nobody beats Father Time. So, you know, my thinking is this. It's not the date you get here, nor the date you leave, because that's written. You just don't know it. It's the line that connects both points. That's where you'll be remembered. And that's why I continually try to do good on that line, so that my legacy that I leave behind will inspire others, you know, especially people of color. You know, if I can be inspirational to a young kid from the ghetto that feels as like there's no out, well, take a look at what he did. There is an out. Yeah. There is a way. And so that's pretty much, and that goes for the Latin community and Asian community, any other community where there's plight, you know.
Bobby, thank you so much for your time today. This has been it's been a real honor and a treat to chat to you.
Oh man,
so,
I hope it was great for you, because I enjoyed this. I definitely did. I appreciate you. Okay.
Thank you so much, Bobby.
London. I love you guys over in the UK. Thank you so much for your support. Couldn't do it without you.
Awesome. Thanks, Bobby. You take care.
You got it.
Bye bye.
Ciao. Peace.
Robert Samuels there, the great Bobby Samuels. I really enjoyed that. I hope that you did too. So many great stories there about working in Hong Kong and living with Sammo and getting to know all those incredible stars from that era. Reviews of Bobby's big Hong Kong movies can be found on our website, kungfumovieguide.com. Links to all of those in the description. So that's links to Gambling Ghost, The Red Wolf, and also Don't Give a Damn. A quick note on the British titles of some of those movies mentioned earlier, particularly the Shaw Brothers titles. I think we said there that Five Fingers of Death is known as King Boxer over here. Also, Five Masters of Death, that's known as Five Shaolin Masters. Reviews of both of those are also available on our website. Duel of the Iron Fist is known as simply The Duel. The Savage Five is fine, that's just known as The Savage Five, as is The Stranger and The Gunfighter. While worth looking into that one, that's the Spaghetti Western Kung Fu hybrid movie from 1974. It's got Lo Lei with Lee Van Cleef in that movie. I will also add links to some of Bobby's short films that are available on YouTube, especially his films Shadow Fist and Shadow Fist 2. Shadow Fist 2 has literally just landed on YouTube a couple of weeks back. Those are great homages to old school Shaw Brothers style kung fu action. I really enjoyed watching those, so go and check those out. And I'll also add a link to Bobby's crime thriller Jugando con Fuego, that is Spanish for playing with fire. That's the more contemporary action performance that Bobby was talking about during our conversation, and again, well worth a look. Some great action in that one. Made in Chinatown, there's a review on kungfumovieguide.com for that one. I'll also add the link to this description. Made in Chinatown is Bobby's feature film directorial debut, co-directing with James Liu, and that is available now on digital platforms. Keep up to date with all the latest Robert Samuels news by following him on Instagram. He is at Samuels_R, as in the letter R. And he is also on Facebook at Robert Bobby Samuels. And that is about it for today. A huge thank you to Robert Samuels for taking the time to talk to me for today's episode. And a huge thank you to you, the loyal Foo follower, who has listened all the way to the very end of this episode. Thank you so much. We will now be taking a brief pause in proceedings until our end of year special, which will land around the week of Christmas. Just keeping those dates pretty vague for the moment as we're in prep for that show. However, do keep it locked to all the usual KFMG pod channels on social media to find out all the latest updates regarding this show. And once again, if you would like to take part in that episode, then please do get in touch with me. Send me your favourite fight films of the year and the reasons why, and your message could be read out on our end of year show. It's as simple as that. Follow the link in the description for the full list of 2022 releases, and send all your correspondence to the usual address, hello@kungfumovieguide.com, or over social media. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until we meet again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the show. Please do take care, stay safe, be well, and I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.